Next on Road Signs, we're excited to welcome Stuart Wiedei, CEO of Blossman Gas and President of Alliance Auto Gas, a nationwide auto gas fueling and vehicle network. Thanks for joining the program, Stuart.
My pleasure. Happy to be here.
So in recent years, there's been a lot of conversation and investment in fuels other than diesel within the trucking industry. You know, several years ago, there was an intense focus on natural gas, and now the conversation has turned mostly to electric-powered trucks. But in this episode, I wanted to take a look at some of the other alternatives that are out there, and one of those alternatives is propane auto gas. Now, I'm sure that some of our listeners don't know much about propane as a vehicle fuel, so could you just start out by telling us what it is and how it works?
Well, first of all, propane is a domestically produced fuel here in the United States. It comes as a byproduct of natural gas refining, and about 15 to 20% of it is from oil refining. We've got a network of 75 million miles of pipelines spread around the United States, in addition to rail systems and other methods to get the product around the country. It's 110-plus-year-old fuel, and maybe that's part of our problem. I often call a propane the stealth fuel because it's ubiquitous in many ways, but not many people have heard about it, especially as a transportation fuel. And there are over 27 million vehicles running on propane auto gas globally. Unfortunately, there are only about 185,000 here in the United States, but it's a very popular alternative fuel to petrol or gasoline and diesel in other parts of the world.
Now, what are some of the advantages of propane auto gas compared with diesel? You know, why would a fleet operator in the transportation industry consider using propane instead of diesel?
Well, that's a question we often get, and there are quite a few positive benefits. The first one that seems to be most effective in terms of the development of the market here in the United States is its cost advantage. Over the last 12 years, propane auto gas has been around 30 to 35% less than gasoline and 40-45% less than diesel. So there's a very definite cost savings benefit. But one of the things that's happening, and I think this is a nice development in the transportation sector as well as other energy generation methods, is we're trying to find ways to be more responsible and good stewards of the Earth's resources and the environment. And propane versus diesel, especially for, take a school bus as an example, a diesel school bus reduces NOx or nitrogen oxides by 96%. And when you compare it to regular gasoline emissions, it's 30% less in greenhouse gases and up to 60% less NOx when you're using propane auto gas. So there's a very definite emissions benefit. It's a cleaner burning fuel in addition to the cost benefit. I think everybody wants to be green until it costs something. So we hit both of those benefits in our mind.
Now, could you give us a few examples of the types of transportation customers that have implemented this fuel in their operations? Just some examples of the types of operations you mentioned, you know, buses. What else is out there?
Well, paratransit vehicles and other vehicles moving people around communities. Think of your local community that's taking elderly folks and the infirmed to doctor's appointments, to the grocery store, to pick up their medications and so forth. That has been a very popular adopter of propane auto gas throughout the country, primarily because those vehicles are running all day, every day, and they have a lot of mileage on them, and the benefits really accrue typically on the cost saving side. Another area that's very popular is law enforcement, sheriff's department vehicles, some ambulances, package delivery services, which we think there's a good runway here in front of us with a lot of the changes that appear to be happening with people ordering things and having them delivered to home. It's sort of like 50, 60, 70 plus years ago, everybody delivered milk to the home, and now that's what goes around comes around, I guess. So law enforcement, people movers, package delivery services, and then there are plenty of other service businesses, pest control, as an example, who are driving around the community all day. And so particularly people who are driving 20, 25,000 miles per more or more per year, they get the greatest benefit.
Sure. And I'm also aware of some Class 8 trucking companies that have tested propane auto gas, but of course it isn't in widespread use in freight transportation today. Now, the propane fueling system that I've read about actually substitutes propane for diesel at certain operating levels for the engine. So it's essentially using a mix of diesel and propane. First off, just explain how that would work in a Class 8 truck.
Well, there's a propane injection system into a compression ignited engine, like a diesel engine for a Class 8 truck. And we can substitute up to 30 to 40% propane into that engine, and it still run within the proper operating parameters and the fuel system guidelines. And what that really does is it provides a cost-effective partial solution to the fuel cost, but also it allows the emissions to improve somewhat marginally, maybe only 10 to 14%. But you can't put 100% today a diesel engine and have it replaced with propane, because CTA rating is very important to a compression ignition engine. And that's not exactly what is possible right now. And so we're looking at class 2 through 7 vehicles. So think of beverage delivery vehicles around the community. Those are a perfect application, right, that are diesel now that can be propane autogas.
No, it's always makes sense, of course, to look at the applications that are best suited to the alternative fuels that are out there. And those are good examples of where it might make the most sense. Now, are these fueling systems generally going to be retrofitted, or is there an option are there any factory options at this point? And also, for a retrofit, how does that play out in terms of engine warranties? I know that for certain large fleets, I mean, that's always going to be a big concern.
There are OEM options here in the United States, and Roush CleanTech is a Ford OEM option. They're working with Ford Motor Company to make the F-250s up through the F-750 commercial vehicles. But primarily the market is aftermarket, and globally around 80% of the market is aftermarket conversions. And that's a great question about the warranty. So the Magnuson-Moss Act requires that if you have an EPA certification, it does not void the manufacturer warranty. So not only does the manufacturer warranty still stay in place, if anything happens that was a cause of our system in Alliance Autogas, we have a 5-year, 100,000-mile warranty. So that is a very important factor, as you mentioned, and particularly fleet adoption.
Now, one aspect of this that we talked about a little bit already, but I'd like to expand upon is, just the potential market for propane in commercial transportation. Could you just explain a little bit more about, precisely the vehicle types and the types of applications, business applications that you think will make the most sense for propane autogas?
Well, we're exporting 27 billion gallons of propane out of this country today. If we just took that, we have the capability of converting over 6 million commercial vehicles to run on propane autogas in the United States. And I think that's relevant, that's important to understand in the context of there's no one solution. The electric vehicle has seemed to really gather tremendous amount of momentum, exposure, and potential, but you can't possibly make enough batteries because there aren't enough materials, and you have to look at how electricity is produced. So in this country, we really need to take a more holistic, I would call it a trans-rational approach, and convert 6 or 7 or 8 million vehicles to autogas, the same for natural gas vehicles and appropriate applications, which is very small routes, garbage trucks, local buses, the transit authorities, and then have where it fits appropriately the electric vehicle. But keep in mind, the electric vehicle has issues with weight and the load that they can carry. So there'll be applications for a number of options, and we can't think one option is going to solve all of our problems. That's one of the fallacies that I see repeatedly when I go to transportation conferences, is everybody there thinks their option can solve all the problems. We need to all work together with multiple options, and really diesel is what we need to eliminate primarily.
That's really interesting, because I would say that within the last just few years, we've seen the OEMs and a lot of the tier one suppliers have been, as we all know, investing heavily in battery electric, and that's pretty much offered as, you know, the propulsion system of the future. Of course, there's continued investment in refining diesel engines, of course, which aren't going away soon. But, you know, there's also natural gas out there. And, you know, your argument is that rather than just trying to convert, you know, all diesels to electric over time, you see a place for multiple fueling options, fuel options for different applications across the industry.
That's the only option as I see it. Just as an example, for one electric battery, it takes 1,000 pounds of weight. It's 500,000 pounds of raw materials that get processed to produce that battery. And those work, but they're very difficult to scale to everything. So I know that the OEMs and many others, and look at some of the companies that have been created, have larger values like Tesla than GM and Ford combined. They're very popular, but in terms of scaling these options out for everything, it's just not possible. We would have to increase by 14 times the expansion of our electric grid system of over the next 40 years in order to accomplish that, versus what we've done in the past 60 years. So a dose of realism is important, and there needs to be a general mix of all these things.
Well, I appreciate that, Stuart. Before I let you go, just, you know, we're going to give you a final opportunity to offer up any additional thoughts on, you know, where you see, you know, commercial transportation heading in the future, and you know, any additional thoughts you have on, you know, where we stand with, you know, the future of fuels in commercial transport.
Thank you for asking. It's a question that's very important. First of all, I'm a great believer in hybridization. We should have electric batteries with some sort of internal combustion or turbine engine recharging the battery along with regenerative braking on the vehicles. That is the perfect combination and leads us into the future. Maybe it's not as sexy as being all electric. The second thing is, I think our country needs to invest in renewable liquid fuels. You know, one of the things that is often misunderstood, in 1970, a vehicle's emissions compared to one today is 99% less today than it was in 1970. And from going simply from port injection to a direct injection to other turbine and turbocharging options that are going to happen into the future, we're going to see internal combustion engines get better and cleaner and more efficient. So the internal combustion engine is not dead. So when you put it in conjunction with a smaller electric battery, it's not as doesn't require as many materials and liquid, renewable liquid fuels. I think we have a great opportunity to make tremendous impact on the cost, but improve our environment and deal with the climate issues that are facing our nation and the globe.
Well, I think that's an excellent stopping point. And I'd just like to thank you again, Stuart, for joining the podcast and sharing your insights. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Seth. Enjoyed it.